Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. It was certainly an atypical winter in Wisconsin. It affected anything from snow plowing businesses to agriculture to snowman building opportunities. But beyond human activities, the warmer weather had some effect on the birds. On today's Newsmakers, I'm talking with bird and eagle experts from the area who, among many things, will address the weather issue. They'll also talk about birds we can start looking and listening for and where the best place is to see an eagle. Scott Mayhus is the education director at the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota. He was joined by Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources biologist Craig Thompson. Thompson starts out by telling me how the warm weather has affected birds in the La Crosse area.
Bird-wise, there have been some interesting things going on. And more often than not, what we see in situations like this is those species that have the northern limit of their range in Wisconsin have a tendency to fare better over a mild winter. So we have species like Carolina Wren or Bobwhite that are probably doing fairly well this winter, whereas over the last four previous winters, they probably didn't do very well because of deep snow, protracted cold, and so on. So those species have a tendency to overwinter in pretty good condition and then breed in the spring. And their populations, if we have successive mild winters, their populations have a tendency to build up. And then when we encounter our next hard winter, and certainly there's one on the horizon, that they have a tendency to diminish over time. So the populations fluctuate wildly with those kinds of species. But in regard to the more typical resident birds, you know, Canada geese are already back. A couple of weeks ago, I was in La Crosse Marsh, and I saw a pair standing on territory already. And that's pretty early for even Canada geese. So the birds that are tough enough to winter in Wisconsin are, I think, finding it a little easier to do so this year.
And I even noticed maybe a month ago, early in the morning, I could hear the birds chirping, and it seemed like they were louder and maybe talking earlier than in the past. And someone had told me from the Audubon Society in the area that they were just more excited. It didn't necessarily mean it was influencing their mating habits or anything else. Is that correct?
Well, I think that the characterization of them being more excited or perhaps a little happier about the weather, yeah, I think that's accurate. You know, birds are controlled hormonally by photoperiod. So as daylight lengthens, their hormonal system changes and they start to come into breeding condition. And that's what actually prompts males to begin to sing. That said, however, in mid-January, I heard cardinals singing, male cardinals singing a full song, and I'd never heard them sing that early. Same with house finches, and I heard woodpeckers drumming by mid-January, and drumming is a territorial behavior that woodpeckers do on wood. Normally, they don't start that in these parts until the end of January, early February, so things seem to be advanced. By early last month, I heard a robin in full song. Now, I don't know whether that robin actually overwintered in La Crosse. Some of them do. Many of them go further south, but the fact that the bird was perched on territory and singing was pretty amazing. So I think weather is having an influence in terms of getting the birds a little more revved up a little earlier than they normally would.
So will that have any influence on their behavior through the rest of the year?
It might provide the opportunity for some species to actually take another run at breeding. So, you know, a robin might have one or two broods, one or two batches of kids. Perhaps this year, if they get started really early and we don't encounter bad weather in a month or so, then they might have the opportunity to raise three broods instead.
And Scott, I'm wondering from you, how has the warm weather affected the eagles in the area?
Yeah, well, I actually have been longing for a good winter, some snow and some ice, because that really affects the numbers of eagles that we have, especially along the river valley during the wintertime. Generally, we have a five-mile stretch near the National Eagle Center where we can see 200 to 300 bald eagles that overwinter along that stretch of water. But because of the mild temperatures, there's very little snow cover, lots of open water, so the eagles are really just spread out across the landscape. So this year, we've been averaging maybe 55 eagles along a five-mile stretch of water where we normally would see 200 to 300. So that definitely affects the numbers of visitors that are coming to the Eagle Center or coming to the River Valley to see eagles. What they learn, though, when they get to the Eagle Center is that the eagles are still here. They're just spread out across the landscape. For example, we did a golden eagle survey that we do every year for 8 years now. It always takes place on the third Saturday in January. This year, we had 154 observers out in southeast Minnesota and west of Wisconsin, and we saw about 129 golden eagles. In response to bald eagles, none of our routes are anywhere near the river, because the golden eagles do not hang out near the river. They're out in the bluff country, out in the driftless area, and so they're away from the river itself. So our routes are out in the driftless area as well. And while we're looking for golden eagles, we're obviously looking for other birds as well. And this year we counted over 400 red-tailed hawks out in that area. But the amazing number is the number of bald eagles. On that Saturday, we counted over 1,400 bald eagles.
Wow.
1,400 bald eagles, and not a one of those was anywhere near the river. So they're all in the bluff country, plenty of open landscape, deer, dead deer and carcasses and things like that. They'll also be feeding on, you know, animal carcasses in manure piles and things like that. And so they're really spread out, and so a little bit harder to see. And so I guess I'm looking for a nice severe winter, I guess, to push the eagles to the river so we have good viewing there.
So do the eagles have easier access to food, the fact that there is more open water?
Sure, they do. They have more easy access to that, but unfortunately that also is kind of a problem as well. We do know that eagles can suffer from lead poisoning, and when the hunters, for example, put the gut piles out after the deer hunting season, they think they're doing a favor for the predators to find those gut piles. But if the eagle sees that, and we all know that eagles have eagle eyes, they go down there and find that and feed on that. Any fragments of lead in there, that eagle may die as quick as in 4 to 5 days. In fact, last year we had 18 eagles that were injured and brought to the Eagle Center in Wabasha, and half of them, unfortunately, were euthanized because of lead poisoning. And we've had a few more eagles. I don't have the numbers yet for this year, but we've had a few more eagles coming in this year already. In fact, the Raptor Center has had, I think, over 65% of the birds that are coming in to the Raptor Center at the University of Minnesota have been coming in this year with elevated level of lead. And that extended that season, because normally we would see that in November and maybe a little bit of December. But we've been seeing birds coming in with lead poisoning in December and January and February. And normally we wouldn't see that again until the snow melts, and then we'd see some birds coming in again in March and April. But we've been seeing eagles coming in with lead poisoning all winter long because of the lack of snow cover.
So is there any way to prevent that, or just, I mean, are you encouraging hunters not to leave, like, the gut piles out, or...?
Yeah, ideally, you know, we'd like for them to cover those gut piles up for sure, so the eagles then aren't able to see that. But unfortunately, that involves other predators may be able to find that as well. And so ideally, we'd like for people to switch over to copper and other types of ammunition, but that may be challenging for some to do. And so we're encouraging people to at least think about where you're putting those piles of flesh or innards or whatever that may have fragments of lead in it.
So now that spring is quickly coming upon us, Craig Thompson, are there certain birds that we should be listening for or watching for?
Yeah, you know, the Canada geese don't go very far away. In fact, some will overwinter depending on how mild the winter it is. So I suspect the birds that I saw in territory a couple of weeks ago are actually birds that probably hung out here just because of the lack of snow cover that Scott had been referring to. But the very early season migrants are starting to return now, Maureen. So, you know, yesterday, warm winds, strong winds out of the south, record temperatures. I think we hit 66 in La Crosse. And when I got to the office this morning, I had started to hear reports from folks about birds that they had heard yesterday. So we're starting to, you know, robins are coming in good numbers now. Killdeer arrived as of yesterday. Cranes came in a couple of weeks ago. In fact, I had a report of a crane almost 3 weeks ago, mid-February. That's awfully early for a bird.
A sandhill crane?
Sandhill crane. I would imagine that red-winged blackbirds will show up this week. And if this mild trend continues, we'll probably be seeing some of the insectivorous birds come back. So our very earliest flycatcher, something called an eastern phoebe, will probably show up within a week or so if the mild trend continues. And then we have to hope that it stays mild for them, because it's pretty hit and miss with these birds in the spring. If we get a long stretch of cold weather, you often see high levels of mortality associated with birds that are insectivorous like the eastern phoebe. So if they arrive, fingers crossed that it stays mild.
And Scott, I know you touched on this a bit before, but different towns are having their eagle watches, and the National Eagle Center is having a number of programs going on currently. But should people start looking for the eagles?
Sure, sure. I mean, this is a great time of the year to be watching our local resident eagles. Most of the eagles in our river valley, at least near Wabasha, are already incubating eggs. They generally are on eggs by the first week of March. We do have a nest that's directly across from the National Eagle Center that we can actually see from the Eagle Center, and we can use spotting scopes from the Eagle Center to see it. They have not laid their eggs, but they are typically one of our last best pairs of eagles in our area to lay eggs. There's a little bay right there that ice fishermen use, and so I think that they kind of suspend their activity until that ice gets a little soft and the fishermen aren't there, and then they seem to start because it seems like they're the latest every year. But yeah, typically they're here now incubating eggs, and it takes about 35 days for incubation. On average, those eagles are laying 2 to 3 eggs, and then about 12 weeks after hatching from those eggs is when they're going to take their first flight on average, and so that happens in July in this area, and so this is the great time to start watching that whole process. And as you may know, there's lots of web cameras out there that are on many nests in the River Valley that you can watch, but I think more fun to get out there and watch from a distance with a spotting scope or a pair of binoculars. And then also at this time of the year, we have the eagles that went a little bit further south. I don't think a lot of them did, as we were talking earlier, but some birds, especially younger birds, went a little bit further south where food was easier to find for them, younger birds, a little more inexperienced at finding food. And so they'll be moving back through this area right now in the first couple of weeks of March as well.
How far south do some of those eagles go?
Oh, some birds may get down into southern Missouri, southern Illinois, but really the bulk of the birds that are nesting across northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, and across Canada, parts of Ontario and Manitoba, as far away as Hudson Bay in Ontario, those birds will migrate into our river valley. And so that's where we get that 200 to 300 bald eagles that are fairly common most winters near the Eagle Center there. And so, obviously more of those are heading towards the La Crosse area and point south as well. But most locations up and down the river have reported poorer numbers of wintering eagles this year.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guests today are Scott Mayhus. He's the Education Director at the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, and Craig Thompson. He is a biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. So, Scott, where are the best places for people to view eagles?
Well, I think at this time of the year, anywhere where there is some water, some backwaters, or lakes that are starting to open up. I drove by a lake on Alaska yesterday, and I was amazed at how much open water there is out there already at this time of the year. But those are the places that you're going to want to concentrate at this time of the year, because those eagles that are moving through on their migration, they're definitely looking for a lunch. And there are fish that have died throughout the winter that are now coming to those open waters in those pools, and the eagles are there taking advantage of those as a free lunch to continue on their migration. And so, there's many locations along the river where that may be. Between La Crescent and La Crosse, there's always a good spot down by the, by the Shopko there, by the Mississippi River there in La Crosse. And so there's lots of, good locations, but right now, as we were talking earlier, I think it's just because there's so much open water, it's not going to be the best year for watching large numbers of eagles migrate through this area.
And Craig, what about some of the birds that either winter over in the La Crosse area or the migratory birds? Where are some of the best places that people can view those?
Well, right now what's happening, Maureen, is that the early arrivals are typically generalists from a habitat standpoint, so you can go almost anywhere to find some of these species. I think what people see more often than not is the robin perched in the yard, in the tree next to their house. They'll hear that bird singing in the morning. The red-winged blackbirds that come back will begin to be seen in flocks as they fly to and from feeding grounds, but they'll set up shop adjacent to roads, and so people that are driving to work, if they're going along a highway, will come in and say, "Oh, I saw a red-wing this morning." It was the first one of the year.
They always seem to be crossing the road.
And they're all, they have a death wish of sorts, so, it's lucky if they make it back and forth through an entire season. The killdeer are going to be associated with open water areas where they can still find food that, as the insects start to emerge, the aquatic insects are usually earlier than the terrestrial insects, and so birds have a tendency to congregate adjacent to those areas in aquatic environments where the food resource is just richer at this time of year. So the best thing to do actually is just keep your ears tuned, and when you start to hear different things, there are new arrivals.
How healthy is the birding scene within the La Crosse area, Craig? I mean, do you see more and more people becoming birders or becoming interested?
That's a great question. I think, we're slowly seeing the number of people interested in birds in the La Crosse area start to ramp up. Last year was a particularly phenomenal migration for a lot of reasons, most of which were weather-related. But we had spectacular concentrations of birds in the River Valley in mid-May. I'd never seen anything like it in 25 years on this side of the state. And I heard a lot of people say, oh my gosh, we saw these colorful little birds that were all over our yard and in the lawn and so on and so forth. Many of the species that they were seeing were warblers. And I think that kind of close-up, intimate exposure to birds, especially in an unexpected way, sparked a lot of interest from folks. And so I think that those kinds of opportunities are always here because we sit in the middle of a gigantic, continentally important flyway. And so I think people more, and we're helping to spread the word, so people are starting to connect more and more with birds as time goes on.
And you have led trips to Central America with a number of birders from the area. Can you talk about that? You were even featured in a Wisconsin Public Television documentary, Our Birds.
The basis for traveling to Latin America has been bird watching, and not only for the wonderful, rich diversity of species that occur in Latin America, and by the time, by the way, that you get down to Colombia and Ecuador, it's the highest bird species diversity in the world. So there's lots of great stuff to see that lives there year-round. But more than 50% of Wisconsin species, and in fact, more than 50% of North America species actually spend the winter in Latin America. So it's not unusual for us to go to Costa Rica or Panama or Ecuador and see species that within a few months will be returning to breed in Wisconsin or Minnesota or Canada. And so that's one of the great joys of actually birding down there, is taking a group down and having them see that not only are there really, really interesting things in terms of resident wildlife and fantastic experiences from a cultural standpoint, but there's a tremendous international connection between our birds here in Wisconsin and birds and habitats in Costa Rica as well.
I mean, it's incredible to me that these tiny birds can have the strength to make that trip every single year.
From a migratory bird standpoint, migration is the most hazardous aspect of their annual life cycle, and there are an enormous number of birds that actually don't make it. So, you know, I think the most physiologically taxing aspect of it is when they actually have to cross the Gulf of Mexico. So what happens is in the fall, the birds begin to slowly drift south, and they start to stage or concentrate on the Gulf of Mexico. And then when weather conditions are just right, and when they've deposited enough body fat, because that's the fuel that sustains them for the journey, they just jump up in the air and go. And once they're up, they're committed. So these little tiny birds that, you know, the size of a chickadee that weigh, you know, as a hummingbird, for instance, weighs less than a dime. And that bird is making a 500-mile nonstop migration across the Gulf of Mexico, and it's got to make it all the way, because if it peters out halfway, it's lights out for the little birds, and I'm sure millions die during migration. But even more birds have the ability to make it. Nonetheless, it's a tough journey physiologically, and so that speaks to the importance of making sure we have good habitats not only on the Gulf Coast but from Wisconsin all the way down to the Gulf, and that we also have good quality habitat by the time they reach the Yucatan Peninsula and then continue their journey south to wherever their wintering grounds may be.
Craig, do you know much about the snowy owls? From what I understand, there were some snowy owls that were spotted in the La Crosse area, and there were some concerns that they were weak and that there were some issues.
What I understand, Maureen, is that there has been a pretty significant influx of snowy owls to the northern tier of states. I had a colleague who recently spent a vacation in Montana and was fortunate to see a number of snowy owls in this particular area that they were in. My understanding is that the snowy owls had a particularly good year up in the Arctic this year in terms of breeding success. There were lots of lemmings, and so they produced really big families. And, of course, these birds have to find things to eat and places to hunt. And so cramped quarters when there's a lot of owls elbow to elbow up in the Arctic. And so one of the things, what happens is a lot of these juvenile birds began to disperse down to the southern tier of states. And because they're juvenile birds, they're inexperienced, you know, they really have a hard time figuring out how to live life. It's not easy to catch stuff on the wing. And a lot of those birds were suffering as a result. Interesting, it seemed to be an early winter phenomena, and I've not heard reports of snowy owls recently. So, you know, those individuals have a tendency to drift around, and maybe they're starting to head back north now. Scott might have some additional information on that.
Yeah. Thanks, Craig. Yeah, yesterday I was actually going to go look for one myself down in Houston County, down by Brownsville. There had been one reported there, but I run out of time. My wife basically said, well, you've seen enough this year. Do you need to see one more? I've been out looking quite a bit. I like looking for species and bird listing and things like that. And so I have seen up to 14 snowy owls this winter. The closest one we had was on Lake Pepin, the frozen edge of Lake Pepin, back on December 15th. But I did see up to five at the La Crosse airport, and that was kind of hard to determine whether that was actually five or more because they were moving around a lot. And that's when we actually had snow out there, and so they were extremely difficult to find. The snowy owls, they knew exactly where to go. They would find little clumps of snow that were piled up, and they would sit amongst them. And because, as Craig mentioned, a lot of these birds are younger birds, and they have a fair amount of dark mottling on their bodies. So they're not pure white like the males are. And so they were rather difficult to find. You would basically wait for a snow mound to move its head. And so, yeah, I think Craig is right. They are moving around. They're less reliable now to see. But the one that was reported down in by Brownsville last week, I believe it was Chris West, I believe, or maybe it was Dan Jack himself, that had seen the snowy owl there eating a muskrat on a pond. And so pretty amazing predators themselves as well. I, in fact, once many years ago up in Grand Marais, Minnesota, watched a snowy owl land on the back of a common merganser, which is a fairly large diving bird. And this was several hundred yards out into Lake Superior. The snowy owl landed on the back of the merganser and didn't kill the merganser. And we're like, well, what's going on? And the merganser was struggling and trying to swim. And eventually it did get to shore, the merganser, with the snowy owl on its back. When it got to shore, then the snowy owl sunk its talons even further, and the merganser died. But the snowy owl did not get a chance to reward itself with its lunch. It unfortunately died within a minute after killing that merganser, more than likely from exposure in the water, and then also just that extra last burst of strength. And so, as Craig mentioned, these birds are starving. They're having a hard time finding food up north, and so they're moving south, starving, looking for food. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of them don't make it. You know, we want people to be interested in birds, and we want them to be watching them and be aware of them. But we also have to be concerned about not getting too close, not scaring them so that they're producing flight and moving, because that's going to waste energy. That also makes them vulnerable to being seen by crows, and crows may then find them and harass them a little bit because they know that owls will often go after crows at night. And so we have to be very careful in our education of, you know, respect for the creatures in their environment.
Scott Mayhus is the education director at the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota. He was joined by Wisconsin DNR biologist Craig Thompson. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up in the next half hour, learn about research that's being done to help keep eagle populations up and efforts to protect all birds. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.